not going to say the first name correctly, Thea Leanne, docket number 47199, here on behalf of the state is Mr. Jorgensen. Here for the defendant is Mr. McGreevy. Mr. Jorgensen, if you're prepared to go forward.
Thank you. May it please the court. In this particular case, the district court has erred. It's fairly well established by both parties that the district court applied certain erroneous legal standards. The state has raised two issues in relation to that claim, and requesting reversal based upon the errors of the district court. The state's first position is that there was no Fourth Amendment violation whatsoever in this case. The state's alternate position, if you will, is that even if the search of Mr. Leon's car ultimately did not qualify under the automobile exception, the district court erred by suppressing evidence beyond the scope of that search. As to the first issue, the question presented by the state is whether an officer who hears a bottle of liquid at the feet of a drunk driver properly searches the vehicle for that container to determine whether it contains alcohol. Simply stated, the evidence that Mr. Leon was a drunk driver, was driving under the influence of alcohol and had committed that crime is very strong in this case. His driving pattern, as reported both by the citizen and observed by the officer, his appearance, some of his statements, the presence of alcohol in the form of unopened wine containers already in the car, ultimately gave rise to probable cause to believe that the alcohol or that the liquid container also in the car at Mr. Leon's feet, the driver of the car, contained alcohol. That gave rise to the automobile exception, and the district court erroneously applied that exception and ultimately suppressed on the basis of an illegal search of the car. There was no illegal search of the car, therefore no illegality found properly by the district court, and the district court should be reversed. If ultimately this court concludes that the officer did not have probable cause to believe that that alcohol was in the car inappropriately, then the district court also erred by expanding the scope of the suppression to include matters unrelated to the search, specifically field sobriety tests, and ultimately the breath testing that occurred in this case, the BAC testing. In this particular case, there is zero reason to believe that the officer would have discontinued his DUI investigation had he not searched the car or had he not discovered the alcohol inside the car. The district court erroneously concluded that the state had the burden of demonstrating that the officer, or that effectively there was but for, or that it was untainted without any sort of the status of the law that says there has to be a connection. And this is a pretty common scenario in relation to the exclusionary rule. We have officers during the course of a lawful detention that occasionally conduct inappropriate searches, such as searches by Terry, when there is no suspicion that the person is armed and dangerous, such as opening a container, such as an Altoid tin found on the person. Those sorts of searches ultimately result in suppression of the evidence obtained by those searches. They do not result in suppression of all evidence obtained as a result of the detention, which is otherwise lawful. Therefore, the district court erred in both respects, and the state would request that this court reverse the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. Mr. McGreevy?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. In this case, the district court correctly concluded that the warrantless search of the bottles inside Mr. Leon's vehicle was unlawful because there's no probable cause to justify the search of the vehicle under the automobile exception to the warrant requirement. And the district court also correctly suppressed the results of the field sobriety and the BAC testing as fruit of the poisonous tree because the state did not prove that the evidence was untainted by unlawful conduct. So turning to the first part of this case and the district court's correct conclusion that the warrantless search of the bottles was unlawful because there's no probable cause to justify the search of the vehicle under the automobile exception, As counsel for the state has pointed out, the court below used a Terry analysis and a plain view analysis to determine that the search of the bottles was unlawful. That is not the appropriate standard here, but the district court still found that the automobile exception did not justify the search. And therefore, because that is a correct analysis and the correct result, this court can affirm that decision of the district court under a right result, wrong reason theory. So the automobile exception allows the police to search a vehicle without a warrant when they have probable cause to believe the evidence the vehicle contains contraband or evidence of a crime. And the district court here found that whatever suspicion the officer had did not meet the probable cause standard necessary to justify application of the automobile exception. Now, under the totality of circumstances here, that was the correct conclusion. And the state's argument that there was probable cause to search the vehicle doesn't consider the full totality of circumstances. So yes, there were factors such as the driving pattern that was reported by a citizen and observed by the officer here. There was also Mr. Leon's red and glassy eyes that the officer observed, the unopened wine containers in the car, and also the sound of the falling plastic bottle that the officer testified to. But the officer also did not detect any smell of alcohol in the vehicle. Additionally, the officer did not see any open containers or other contraband. And that is also, those two factors are also part of the totality of circumstances here. Those are important factors. And we know that because this court, in other cases involving probable cause to search a vehicle for evidence of a DUI or open container violation, have relied upon those factors as a very crucial part of the totality of circumstances, of the probable cause analysis in total. Cases such as
Didn't the district court get hung up on those two factors in the sense of saying that they were required before the court could even really get into the analysis of the automobile exception, that there had to be the sight of alcohol or the smell of alcohol as sort of a prerequisite to even analyzing anything else, that the court was reading our cases that, yes, maybe those are important factors, but I think the court elevated those factors to, in essence, a requirement before the analysis begins. Do you disagree with that?
I disagree with that reading of the district court's decision here. The district court went through the probable cause standard. If you look at page 5 of the district court's decision, for example, so that's page 112 of the record, where it talks about how there must be objective facts which would be sufficient to convince a magistrate to issue a warrant under similar circumstances. And then it talks about, in the context of containers, Idaho cases demonstrate that probable cause can be established on the basis of visible contraband or the smell of alcohol come from the vehicle. So the court is observing that in those cases, such as Anderson and Wigington, this court has highlighted the importance of the smell of alcohol or seeing contraband in the vehicle as vital in some cases, under those circumstances at least, to establishing probable cause. And the court noted correctly here that those factors weren't present here. And so the court correctly ruled that under these particular circumstances, looking at the totality of the facts here, there wasn't enough to elevate the officer's suspicion to probable cause, that there was the fair probability that there would be evidence of a crime or contraband in the vehicle to be searched. And really, that's what we're looking at. We're not looking at whether there was reasonable suspicion to allow the officer to conduct a further investigation, such as conducting field sobriety tests. We're looking at whether there was probable cause for the officer to search in this vehicle. And the district court correctly concluded that here, under these facts, this particular set of circumstances, there just wasn't enough to create probable cause. So the state therefore hasn't met its burden of showing that an exception to the warrant requirement applies here. The state on appeal is only using the automobile exception as the justification, the purported justification for the search of the vehicle. And because there wasn't enough probable cause under these circumstances to create probable cause, the Yamabil exception does not apply. The state is not arguing that any other exception applies, and therefore this warrantless search of the vehicle was unconstitutional. So turning to the second part of the district court's analysis, that the district court correctly suppressed the results of the field sobriety and the DAC testing as through the poisonous tree. This was correct because the state did not prove that the evidence was untainted by unlawful conduct. So I think it's important to go over what this court decided about 13 years ago in McBain in terms of the burdens of persuasion here. And I think parties both recognize that the state has the ultimate burden of persuasion to prove that the challenged evidence is untainted. But we also recognize that the defendant bears the initial burden of going forward with evidence to show a factual nexus between the illegality and the state's acquisition of the evidence. And in this case, Mr. Lien has shown that factual nexus, and the district court, by going to the state's ultimate burden of persuasion, effectively ruled that Mr. Lien had met that initial burden. So as this court explained in McBain, the initial burden of the defendant is a prima facie showing that evidence would not have come to light but for the unconstitutional conduct of the officer. Now this is a but-for case. Now this court was careful in McBain to explain that does not mean that the defendant has a burden of showing the state would not or could not have discovered the evidence on any set of hypothetical circumstances that could have arisen without the illegal search. So when the state argues that there's no reason to believe that the officer would have discontinued the field sobriety test and the investigation, that's really going into hypotheticals. And this court made clear that that's not the standard in terms of the initial burden that the defendant has to meet. What this court McBain explained is that the defendant needs to only show that on the events that did take place, the discovery of the evidence was a product or result of the unlawful police conduct. And that's what we have here. We have the district court proceeding to the state's ultimate burden, proving that the challenged evidence was untainted. So the district court is effectively ruling that Mr. Lien had met his burden of showing this factual nexus. And again, the factual nexus is a but-for causation, but as this court explained in McBain, that but-for causation is a showing that on the events that did take place, the discovery of the evidence was a product or result of the unlawful police conduct. And we have that here. In fact, the district court ruled that the officer decided to conduct the field sobriety test based, at least in part, on the discovery of the open containers of alcohol that were discovered through the illegal search of the vehicle. Now that's a factual determination, and the district court was within its discretion to make these kinds of factual determinations. Now on the standard of review at play here for factual determinations like that, the state has not shown clear error in the factual findings made by the court with respect to this causation, with respect to the initial burden, and also the fact that the ruling that the state has not proven that the evidence was untainted.
Is that factual finding you just recited the sole basis for your argument that the defendant met his burden?
Well, it's also, Your Honor, the fact that the court moved to the state's ultimate burden of persuasion. And again, on these facts,
it's in the evidence in the record that the defendant met his burden.
Well, the evidence in the record is that we have the temporal relationship between the illegal search of the vehicle and the subsequent field sobriety tests. And based on that, the court made this factual finding that the decision to conduct the field sobriety test was based, at least in part, on the discovery of the open containers of alcohol.
What do you think the at least in part means?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part of that, Your Honor.
And how would you interpret that clause, at least in part?
Well, the district court might be acknowledging that the standard from McBain is that the initial showing by the defendant has to be that the discovery of the evidence is a product or result of the unlawful police conduct. But the but-for causation standard that this court outlined in McBain doesn't mean that the result has to be exclusively produced by the conduct. It can, and must be a product or a result. And that's what the district court found here, that the search was based at least in part, so therefore it was a product of the unlawful conduct. So it may be a different way of putting the McBain standard, the words from McBain, but it does show that Mr. Lien here had met that initial burden. Now, in terms of the state's argument that there's no evidence of a causal connection between the field sobriety tests and the search of Mr. Lien's vehicle, so again, we have the district court's ruling. We also have the ruling on the officer's testimony. Now, the officer testified that he made the decision to conduct the field sobriety tests prior to conducting the search, but he didn't want to do that because he was concerned that the passenger in the vehicle might destroy the evidence. But the district court made the finding that testimony by the officer was not persuasive. And in terms of decisions on witness credibility, those decisions are within the discretion of the district court, and the state hasn't really argued or put on evidence to show that the district court's finding lacks substantial evidence in terms of it being clearly erroneous. So the state has not shown that the district court's credibility determination that this testimony was not persuasive is clearly erroneous. The state also hasn't shown that the factual finding by the district court in terms of the timing and manner of the search was clearly erroneous. Now, the decisions of the district court on inferences to be drawn from the record, on the weight to be given to the evidence from a suppression hearing, those are also within the district court's discretion. So it's again under clear error standard, and the state simply hasn't proven that these factual determinations are clearly erroneous. So based on that standard, we have shown a factual nexus. The state's argument that there's no evidence of a causal connection should be rejected because there is evidence of a factual nexus. There is evidence of this but-for causation that the field sobriety test and the blood alcohol testing is a result or product of the illegal search of the vehicle. And we don't have the state showing clear error on any of these factual determinations made by the district court. And the state, furthermore, doesn't make a separate argument that the field sobriety test...
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Ms. Velasquez, is that background noise coming from your office?
Okay, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I will mute my audio after I speak, but it looks like they're doing some work on the elevator here in the basement.
Oh.
So yeah. That is... That's my
okay.
noise.
That's not your fault, Mr. McGreevy.
No. It's coming from downstairs.
Okay.
And again, Ms. Velasquez, if you can mute my audio after I'm done, that's fine. Otherwise, I'll try and mute it myself.
Okay.
That's okay, Mr. McGreevy. I just wanted to make sure that there was something that wasn't just me.
All right. So to get back to my earlier point, the state doesn't make a separate argument that the field sobriety tests and the BAC testing were untainted by unlawful search. Their argument is really resting on this contention that Mr. Lien hadn't met his initial burden. But we've shown that he did meet his initial burden. The district court effectively made that ruling by moving to the state's ultimate burden persuasion. And the state hasn't shown that the factual findings by the court on this point are clearly erroneous. So in sum, the district court correctly suppressed the results of the field sobriety test and breathalyzer test as fruit of the poisonous tree. So unless there are any further questions from this court, Mr. Lien would ask that this court affirm the district court order granting in part the motion to suppress. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGreevy. Mr. Jorgensen, any response?
Just a couple of small points. First off, Judge Gratton talked just briefly about whether the court was kind of hung up on the sight and smell thing. And the reading of the opinion is quite clear in that regard. The court considered only three potential factors: sight, smell, and sound. and it deemed sound alone insufficient. So the court clearly was not applying the totality of the circumstances test when it made its ruling. It was looking at just, it said only, well, if you see it, that would justify it. If you smell it, that might justify it. If you hear it, that will never justify it. That's clearly an erroneous legal interpretation. It's an erroneous legal standard. It's a totality of the circumstances. The court should have considered that in relation to all of the circumstances. And ultimately what we have is the sound of a liquid container, a container of liquid, a plastic bottle, at the feet of somebody who is strongly suspected of driving under the influence. Under those circumstances, that does rise to probable cause, justifying the automobile search, and therefore justifying reversal of the district court. As to the second point, even if the automobile search was inappropriate, the standard is but for, and counsel's talked a little bit about hypotheticals. We don't have a hypothetical in this case. We know exactly what the officer did and didn't do. And what the officer did was conduct field sobriety tests. The only question is whether those field sobriety tests were conducted only because of the search of the automobile. And the district court said, well, the officer searched the automobile in order to find evidence to justify the field sobriety tests. Well, there is ample reasonable suspicion justifying the field sobriety test with or without the alcohol from the vehicle. In fact, alcohol from the vehicle is rarely involved in the field sobriety test reasonable suspicion standard. And it just simply is fairly irrelevant to that. So the district court did err by considering that. But for the illegality, would the officer have discovered this evidence? And the answer is fairly clear on the facts, both as found by the district court and as presented in the evidence, that no, the discovery of the alcohol in the vehicle is not the but-for causation of the discovery of the field sobriety test results. That was part of the officer's investigation. Therefore, the district court erred on both counts, and the state asked that this court reverse.
Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. The court appreciates the briefing and argument in this case. The case is now fully submitted to the court. We'll issue an opinion in due course. Court will be in recess until 1:30 this afternoon.
Thank you, Sarah.